Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to this second weekend of the presentation of tenants. So just to remind ourselves of the schedule, so it's the same schedule as last weekend. So first session, 10 till 11.15, 30-minute tea break. And second session, 11.45 till 12.45, and then lunch. And as last week, we're going to have buffet lunch provided, and I think this time it's going to be available in the cafeteria, cafe area for lunch. So 12.45 till 2, and then the next session after lunch, 2 to 3, 3 to 3.30 tea break, 3.30 to 4.30 last session. So same schedule as last week. And so I think hopefully you've all brought back your copies of the texts for this. So there's the actual text, the presentation of tenants, and then there's one with lots of charts. If you don't have a copy, there are copies here in the front. So again, the text we are following is this text called Presentation of Tenants by Jetson Chucky Geltson, lived in the 15th, 16th century. He was the textbook writer for the Sarah J. Monastic College within the Gluck tradition. So there are a number of different tenants' texts available, particularly within the Tibetan tradition, but the one we're using is this one here because this centre is, of course, the Gluck Centre and associated with the Sarah J. Monastic College. So we're using this one. Also, as I did last weekend, I'll be referring to this, particularly this book here called Buddhist Philosophy. It's a small commentary on another text by another great Indian master, Jungyam Shepa. So I'll be using that from time to time, and then maybe occasionally also this one here, Maps of the Profound, which is actually also the same tenets text as this, but also goes into some other more extensive Tibetan commentaries on that text from Jungyam Shepa. So this, in some cases, when we're looking for some very fine details, has a little bit more information in it. So we'll refer to that one a few times over the coming days. Okay. So in this text, of course, as we've seen, there are four philosophical schools that we're looking at. We looked at the first two last week, the Vaibhashika Sautrantika. A little bit later, we'll go do a little bit of a review of those. And this weekend, of course, we're focusing on the Chittamatra and Majjhimika philosophical systems. And both the Chittamatra and Majjhimika philosophical systems, as we're going to see, really refute the idea that there is an independent external world out there. And that really the primacy of the mind, that everything is really coming from the mind. So the mind is really playing a pivotal role both in the Chittamatra and the Majjhimika philosophical system. So because of that, I'd like to, in our meditations, really emphasize that, really emphasize the focusing on the mind. So as we did last week, we'll start with a short meditation just to relax the body, relax the mind. Also, we'll do a little bit of a practice of working with the mind, and then also setting a good motivation for the coming day. So let's start with that first. We begin by allowing our awareness to descend into the body, simply becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. And using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension we may find in any part of the body. And bringing your awareness to the area of the face, softening and relaxing all the muscles in the face. In this way, allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. And if you find it helpful, you can take three slow, deep breaths, maintaining awareness of sensations throughout the body as you breathe. And then allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Not trying to control or regulate the breath in any way. Allowing the breathing to flow naturally and effortlessly. And preparing the mind, letting go of any thoughts of the past or the future, and simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the stillness of the present moment, focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Now allow your eyes to be at least partially open, vacantly resting your gaze in the space in front of you, And now bring your attention to your own mind. And simply observe your own mind and whatever is arising in the mind. Thoughts, emotions, memories, mental images. Simply observe these mental events as they arise and pass, without following them, without trying to get rid of them. Simply be like an impartial observer or witness, observing them arising and passing, without grasping, without distraction. If you're new to this practice and you're not really sure where to focus, then every now and again, deliberately generate a thought. Any thought will do. And watch that thought as it arises in your mind, and watch it as it disappears back into the mind. And then simply keep your attention right where it was, and see what arises next in that space. if you got caught up in a thought and got carried away, remember the first thing to do is simply relax. Then release grasping onto that thought and very gently return to observing the mind. So relax, release, and return each time you get swept away. Or if you're finding that you're simply becoming dull and spaced out, then you can use the in-breath as an opportunity to arouse and refresh your focus on the mind. can spend the last few minutes of this meditation thinking about our motivation for coming here this weekend and setting the best possible motivation we can. And if possible, try to include others in our motivation. Not only being motivated for our own benefit, but also to be able to benefit others. So keeping this motivation in mind, we can now begin our discussions together. So let's, like as we did last weekend, let's start with a review. In particular, review a little bit on how these tenant systems evolved. In particular, I'd like to focus a little bit more on how the last two tenet systems evolved, because they are going to be the topic for this weekend. So remember, we talked about the Buddha's teachings is that he taught what was called the three turnings of the wheel of Dharma. And in the first turning of the wheel, called the Four Noble Truths, which is the very first teaching the Buddha gave, taking place in a place called Sarnath, close to Varanasi. So, of course, here in the Four Noble Truths, as we saw last week, and I think many of you have heard this teaching many times, is the first two Noble Truths is the Buddha's diagnosis for us. What condition do we find ourselves in, and why are we in this state? So the first noble truth, truth of suffering, or in Sanskrit or Pali, dukkha, is the condition we find ourselves in, that we find ourselves in this unsatisfactory state. Sometimes we have some physical or mental suffering. Our pleasant experiences are very transient and temporary, unreliable. But at the deepest level, we're stuck in a state of dukkha whereby there's always a potential for some sort of suffering to arise in our life if certain conditions come together. So all of this encompasses the meaning of the word dukkha, which normally is translated as suffering, but very difficult to find a word that really has that same meaning. So sometimes it's translated as unsatisfactory. So we find ourselves in this state. Why are we in this state? The second noble truth, truth of the cause or origin. And here we normally find two things identified as the underlying cause of why we're stuck in the state. And that is the mental afflictions, or in Sanskrit, the kleshas, and then actions, our physical and verbal actions that are driven by those mental afflictions. And of course, those actions lead to consequences. So that's the theory of karma, is that every action we do motivated by mental afflictions leads to the result. Our result, of course, is the experiences of dukkha. And what we saw there in the Four Noble Truths is that, of course, the mental afflictions or kleshas can be really condensed into what are called the three poisons, the three main mental afflictions: ignorance, attachment, and aversion. Sometimes the aversion is listed as anger or hatred, just to highlight that anger and hatred are a very specific type of aversion that is very destructive. But in general, that third mental affliction is simply aversion. And the ignorance, here, of course, ignorance can be many things. It's just being confused about something. But here in the three poisons, it's a very specific type of ignorance. It's an ignorance that misunderstands nature of reality. And here in the Four Noble Truths teachings, what we saw last week was that this fundamental ignorance is identified as grasping to self, that we overinflate the sense of me or person, and we grasp onto what's called self. And this is leading to the attachment and aversion, all the other mental afflictions and suffering. And so this way of grasping onto person, of course, remember, none of these philosophical systems are saying there's no me or no person. They're all discussing how do we exist. And they all agree that now, currently, we overinflate our sense of me, of person. We have a false sense of me, this grasping onto self. And we're going to look at that again a little bit later, that from last week we saw that at least we identified two different ways of falsely grasping onto self, both of which are refuted by all of these Buddhist philosophical systems. Third noble truth, of course, truth of cessation, was the Buddhist prognosis that we can actually overcome this unsatisfactory state of dukkha. We can achieve liberation from suffering. We can achieve this goal of nirvana. So this current state we find ourselves in is called samsara. So samsara, sometimes translated as cyclic existence, is this cycling life after life in this state of dukkha because of our mental afflictions, particularly ignorance. But we can overcome this cycling, we can overcome this cycle of existence called samsara by eliminating its cause, ignorance. And we can achieve a goal of nirvana. So what we saw there, and maybe we can look at our first chart to refresh our mind, the two vehicles chart, is that what's called the Hinayana vehicle is based on the Four Noble Truths, and the goal of the spiritual path here is nirvana. The goal is to overcome the state of dukkha. And what we saw there in that chant was that the practices, or the Fourth Noble Truth, truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering, is normally presented as the Noble Eightfold Path. These eight practices that we need to engage in to overcome, to achieve this goal. And these eight practices, as we saw, can be condensed into what's called the three higher trainings, three core areas of practice of ethics, concentration, and wisdom. And wisdom here is this wisdom coming to realize the nature of reality. And so sometimes this wisdom practice is called by another name, in Pali, vipassana, in Sanskrit, vipassana, which those two words are usually translated as insight or special insight, gaining insight into nature of reality. And so what we saw here was that the vipassana practice, because the Four Noble Truths teachings initially were spread from India through the Pali language. And so there the vipassana practice was, as we see here, mainly identified as gaining insight into the three marks of existence, coming to realize impermanence, realizing dukkha, the first noble truth, and realizing no self. Because by realizing impermanence, that everything's changing moment by moment, that's very helpful in really reducing a lot of our attachment and aversion. So already that's very helpful in reducing not only the mental afflictions, but suffering that they produce. And then, of course, by realizing having the second insight into dukkha, and particularly understanding that that's coming from mental afflictions and ignorance, we can develop the aspiration to be liberated from samsara. So the second insight really helps us to develop this aspiration for liberation, often translated, not in a very good way, as the word renunciation. And then, of course, by realizing no self, that we do not exist in this overinflated way, we can overcome that fundamental ignorance, all mental afflictions and suffering, and achieve the goal of nirvana. So that is the first turning of the wheel, the essence of that. And what we saw last week was that from those teachings, we have the first two philosophical systems evolving. That we have the Vaibhashika and Sautrantika philosophical systems. And if we go on to the second chart, the four Buddhist tenet systems, we can see that the Vaibhashika actually was historically the first system to evolve. So remember, these four philosophical systems are more about later looking back and identifying the different assertions that people have and then putting them in those groups. So what we saw there then is that the Vaibhashika school is actually made up of these 18 sub-schools, meaning that after the time of the Buddha, a number of different groups with very similar assertions based on the Four Noble Truths evolved, but with some subtle differences. And so then later, looking back, they identified these 18 groups or systems as the Vaibhashika system, because they all are following the Four Noble Truths and very similar in their assertions, some slight differences amongst some of those groups. Whereas the second school, the Sautrantika, evolved much later. And we saw there last week that there are actually two sub-schools within that, the followers of scripture and the followers of reasoning. The followers of scripture, it says here, followers of Vasubandhu's Abhidharma Kosha. Actually, the Abhidharma Kosha was written on the basis of the Vaibhashika system. However, Vasubandhu wrote his own auto-commentary on Abhidharma Kosha, and in his auto-commentary, he looked at that from the perspective of Sautrantika. So this is really the basis of the Sautrantika system. And of course, Vasubandhu was in the 4th century. So that only really started to evolve, particularly on the basis of his efforts, making some distinctions from the Vaibhashika ideas, having some different assertions than the Vaibhashikas. And then also later, in the 7th century, we have another great Indian master, Dharmakirti. And on the basis of some of his works, we have another sub-school of Sautrantika evolving. And as we're going to see a little bit later, again, when we review this a little bit more detail, the differences between these two sub-schools of Sautrantika. But both Vaibhashika and Sautrantika are based on the Four Noble Truths teachings. So in those philosophical systems, then we're talking about the fundamental ignorance of grasping onto self of person. And as we saw last week and in the Four Noble Truths, then there is no assertion that there's anything wrong with the way we see the world. as the way we see the world. So in both of those philosophical systems, what we saw last week was that they both accept what's called truly existent external objects, meaning that the world exists as it appears. To us now, it appears as if the world is existing completely independent of us, and things exist from their own side. And they accept that, both of these schools. So again, the fundamental ignorance is this grasping onto self. And we'll talk a little bit more about those two a little bit later. But now what I'd like to do is mainly focus on the next two, a little bit of an overview of how the next two philosophical systems evolve, because that's going to be the topic for this weekend. So the second turning of the wheel was called without characteristics. And here, and this was mainly taught, the Four Noble Truths mainly taught around in Sarnath. Second turning of the wheel, mainly taught in the area around Rajkia, close to Bodh Gaya. And here, the Buddha identified a deeper level of ignorance than merely grasping onto self of person. That he also said that the way in which the world appears to us is deceiving us. That there is, in fact, no independent, objective world out there. So in this turning of the wheel, we have this idea of emptiness, or in Sanskrit, shunyata, that there is no independent objective world, there's no independent subjective me, that everything's empty of existing inherently from its own side, truly existing. So from this turning of the wheel then, we have actually what's called the fourth philosophical system evolving, the Majjhimika. Vaibhashika is normally translated in English as something like great exposition, Sautrantika, the Sutra school. Majjhimika, often translated as middle way school. As we saw last week, actually, all of these philosophical systems claim to be the middle way. Because we're talking about, in general, avoiding or overcoming the two extremes. So we saw last week the idea of the two extremes. Existence and non-existence, sometimes called eternalism, nihilism. And what we saw in these two extremes is that we tend to fall to either of those. Generally, we tend to fall to the extreme of existence. And that extreme of existence involves what's called superimposition. And superimposition means, as the word suggests, we're superimposing something, which means we are adding something extra to how things exist. And as we saw last week, in those two philosophical systems, what we're superimposing is we are adding or superimposing that we exist as self, this sort of self-sufficient, substantially existent self. So generally, we are stuck in this stream of superimposition. We are superimposing on top of reality, adding something that doesn't exist. Whereas the extreme of non-existence or nihilism is through what's called deprecation. And as the name suggests, deprecate means taking away something that actually exists. So there is a me, there is a world, and so often when we fall into deprecation is we are denying the existence of things that actually exist. That, for example, we sometimes can come to the conclusion, oh, there's no me at all, I don't exist, nothing exists. So that's deprecation. So these are the two extremes that we find ourselves in, most often in this extreme, but sometimes we end up here as well. And all of the philosophical systems, of course, are trying to avoid these two extremes. And we had that chart in looking at a little bit how each of the schools claim that they are avoiding the two extremes. And we'll go back to that as we go through the two tenet systems this weekend. So, in fact, all systems claim to be middle way in terms of avoiding extremes. And again, during this weekend, we'll look at that in more detail, how each of those philosophical systems, particularly the last two, how they claim to be avoiding the middle way, avoiding the two extremes and being the middle way. So the second turning of the wheel, then, fourth school actually, not number three, the fourth philosophical system of Majjhimika. And in the Majjhimika, if we look at the four Buddhist tenet systems, we see that there are two sub-schools there, Svatantrika and Prasangika. And how they evolved was that, again, from this teaching of the Buddha, it was around the 2nd century, we have great Indian master Nagarjuna, who wrote a classic text called Mula Majjhimika Karika, The Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way. And it's on the basis of that that this Majjhimika philosophical system really started to evolve from the 2nd century. But then some centuries later, around the 6th century, 5th, 6th century, we have a great Indian master, Buddhapalita, who wrote a commentary on Nagarjuna, describing his interpretation of what Nagarjuna was saying about emptiness. Shortly after that, we have another great Indian master, Baba Viveka, who comes along and looks at Buddhapalita's commentary and goes, I don't think you really understood what Nagarjuna was saying. He was actually saying this. So then Baba Viveka brings forward a slightly different version of what's meant by emptiness. And then a century or so later, another great Indian master, Chandrakirti, came along and looked at both of those commentaries and said, actually, Buddhapalita got it right and Baba Viveka didn't really get it right. So because of those three Indian masters, we have this sort of split in terms of understanding of emptiness based on Nagarjuna. So the Prasangika interpretation, which of course was accepted by Buddhapalita and Chandrakirti. So often then the Prasangika, the founder is Buddhapalita or sometimes Chandrakirti because he sort of clarified. So either of those two. Whereas the Svatantrika, the founder is Baba Viveka. And as when we go into the Majjhimika system later, we'll talk a little bit more about the implications of that difference of understanding, what that implies. And in particular, that's reflected in the two names of Svatantrika and Prasangika. And again, these two names were then came much later than at the time of Buddhapalita and Chandrakirti and Baba Viveka. And it's looking back on these assertions, and then these terms were coined based on their different assertions. And as we see in the chart, and we'll look at that later, even in the Svatantrika, we have two sub-schools here, Yogacara and Sautrantika Svatantrika, but we'll look at that later, how that came about. So this is the Majjhimika philosophical system. Now, this idea of emptiness here is very difficult to really appreciate And once we start to hear teachings on emptiness, then often what happens is that we flip to the extreme of nihilism. Because often when we look at this idea of emptiness, it's very subtle. It seems to say that nothing really exists. Nothing has its own unique nature. And we misinterpret that to mean, oh, nothing exists at all. And even there's a number of very well-known modern-day philosophers who look at Nagarjuna and say he's a nihilist, but actually that's what he's saying. So it's very easy to fall to this extreme when we hear these teachings on emptiness, because it's difficult to appreciate. And so, therefore, to help avoid falling to the extreme of nihilism, we have teachings coming within the third turning of the wheel called fine discrimination. And this third turning of the wheel, which is mainly taught around the area of Vaishali, the Buddha taught the idea of emptiness as well, and he also taught this idea that the world does not exist as it appears, that there is no independent objective world out there. But what he did was, here he said there's no independent objective world out there because actually the world is internal to the mind. And here in this 13 in the wheel, we see an analogy to that, and we'll look at why or how their refutation of external world, what they use as a way of refuting that there is in fact even an external world. And one of the analogies they give to help substantiate their claim is the analogy of a dream. Is that now when we're dreaming, in the dream, everything appears to exist out there. There really does appear to be an independent physical world in the dream. But if we become lucid in the dream, of course, we will come to directly see that these appearances are deceiving us. Even though there appears to be an independent physical world in the dream, there is no physical world in the dream. That the world is nature of the mind, internal to the mind. So that's one of the analogies or examples they give to show that we can be deceived and that actually everything's internal to the mind. So here we have also the idea of emptiness. But here emptiness doesn't mean the same as in the second turning wheel. So here emptiness within the Majjhimaka philosophical system, as we can see in the four Buddhist tenet systems, is that it's refuting true existence, that there is no truly existent world, there's no truly existent me. Whereas here in the third turning of the wheel, the idea of emptiness is this idea that there's no external world at all. So emptiness is the fact, is the emptiness of subject-object duality, that there's no internal me and external world, that the world is of the nature of the mind. And so we see that reflected in that tenet system, and that's the one we're going to be looking at first this weekend, the Chittamatra. So the third philosophical system that came out of the third turning of the wheel is Chittamatra. And Chittamatra is often translated as mind only. So here then, this is what emptiness means, that the world is empty of being an external world. There's no subject-object duality in that sense. In both the second and third turning of the wheel, what we're going to see as well is the Buddha also taught about the idea of enlightenment being an extra step. In the what we saw in the first two philosophical systems last week is that there's not really a great distinction between nirvana and enlightenment. The terms are used, but there's not really a distinction. And in general, in those first two philosophical systems, for the average person, we can achieve the goal of nirvana. There was one special person 2,500 years ago who actually became Buddha, full enlightenment. He was someone very special. He was the only one who could manage to do that. Every one of us else can only really achieve nirvana, become what's called an arhat. So both a person who becomes an arhat and the Buddha eliminated the same. They eliminated this ignorance, this grasping onto self of person. But because the Buddha was someone special, he had some extra qualities, this quality of all-knowingness. Whereas in these two turnings of the wheel, second and third, and that's reflected in the Chittamatra Majjhimaka philosophical system, there is very much a distinction between nirvana and enlightenment. And that nirvana, as with the lower two systems, to get to nirvana, we need to eliminate what's called the afflictive obscurations. That is, we need to eliminate this fundamental ignorance and all the mental afflictions. So there's agreement there. Of course, what exactly that ignorance is, there's differences of opinion, but they all agree that to achieve nirvana, we need to get rid of the afflictive obscurations, the ignorance, mental afflictions. But then the Chittamatra and the Majjhimaka system say that enlightenment, which we all can achieve, although there's one subschool in Chittamatra, as we're going to see, that doesn't accept that. But apart from that, everyone else within these philosophical systems accepts that we can all become enlightened and we all eventually will. But to get from being an arhat to a Buddha, there's something extra we need to do. We need to eliminate what's called the cognitive obscurations. And so they all talk about the two obscurations in Chittamatra Majjhimaka, the afflictive obscurations and cognitive obscurations. And we need to get rid of these cognitive obscurations to get from becoming an arhat to enlightenment, from nirvana to enlightenment. So the lower two systems we looked at last week, no mention of any cognitive obscurations, just the afflictive obscurations. What those cognitive obscurations are, of course, a little bit of discussion about that and some differences within Chittamatra and Majjhimaka, and we'll look at that. But they all both assert there are these cognitive obscurations and we need to get rid of those, and if we do, we can become enlightened. So that's a little bit difference between these two systems we're looking at this week and the two we looked at last week. Now, in this fine discrimination, and that's something we're going to be looking at in more detail later, we have what's called the teachings on the three natures. And these three natures were a way in which the Chittamatrans sort of interpreted the meaning of the perfection of wisdom teaching. So remember, in the second turning of the wheel, these perfection of wisdom teachings, like the Heart Sutra and stuff, saying that everything's empty of independent inherent existence. So the Chittamatrans accept that, but not literally. You have to interpret it, what the Buddha was really saying. So one of the ways of doing that is these three natures, which we're going to look at in more detail, but I thought I'd just briefly mention them here. And these three natures are what's called other-powered nature,
Sometimes translated as dependent nature. Then there's the imputed nature, or sometimes called imputational nature, and then what's called thoroughly established nature, or sometimes this is translated as ultimate nature. And so what Chinnamatrans are saying is that, like the lower schools, phenomena, functioning things, are other power, meaning that the things that we experience are other power, meaning they are produced through causes and conditions. So that's a dependent nature, that all the functioning things that we, including ourselves and the body and so forth, are other power, that they arise through causes and conditions. So that's in agreement with the lower schools. But then what they say is that on the basis of all these things which we experience, there is an imputed nature. And the imputed nature, as we can sort of understand, and this is really the basis of the Majjhimika system, is that when we see this here, this plant, it's produced through causes and conditions. But one imputed nature is that we say flower, that we impute flower on the basis of this functioning thing. That's okay. But in here, the Chittamantans say we also impute that that's an external flower. That exists external to us. So they say that imputed nature that we impute, that this is an external physical flower, is false. So the thoroughly established or ultimate nature is that that imputed nature, i.e. external flower, does not exist with respect to this. So that's what their emptiness is. That's what they say emptiness is. Emptiness, which is the thoroughly established or ultimate nature, is the fact that external object, or external flower in this case, does not exist in the basis. There's no external flower there. So that's what they talk about here. So imputed nature, there are two types. There's what's called existent and non-existent. So the existent imputed nature is simply flower. That exists. That flower is imputed on the basis of this functioning phenomena that depends on cause and condition. So that's okay. But also, we impute that that is an external flower. That exists external to the mind. So external flower, or basically self or phenomena is what they are saying, does not exist. And so realizing this does not exist, there's no external flower there, is the thoroughly established or ultimate nature, or in other words, emptiness. So this is emptiness for them. Emptiness is the fact that there's no external flower there. Any questions about three natures? We're going to be looking at this, of course, in more detail in the Chittamatra, but this is sort of really the sort of the foundation of their view on how to really understand the idea of emptiness.
You said that
all philosophical systems talk about definitive and interpretive. But how to, and we're going to look at that, particularly in these two philosophical systems, as we saw here, with these two philosophical systems in general, anything definitive is accepted literally. If you can't accept it literally, it's not really even in the word of the Buddha. So for these two philosophical systems, who say that it has to be literal to be definitive, they often, and we saw that in their assertion, or at least most of them, is that they would not even accept these teachings as the word of the Buddha, because you can't accept them literally. So for them, then we can't accept. Whereas here, and what we're going to see in the Chittamatra and Majjhimika that comes in the tenets, is they both, of course, talk about what is definitive and what's interpretable, or what's interpreted. And the milestone of what it means to be definitive and interpretive changes within Chittamatra and Majjhimika. What the criteria is for something to be definitive or interpretive is different. How they measure that is different, and we'll see that in their tenets, how both the Chittamatra and Majjhimika, what is their measure of being definitive and interpretive. So that's still coming. So, but they all, and of course they disagree, of course, but they have, particularly here, they do have an idea of what it means for something to be definitive and what it means for something to be interpretive. And it's different, but it's kind of. Any other questions? Yeah.
At the moment, three natures is looking a bit like Madhyamaka as well.
Yeah. In fact, what we find here in this particular tense test, we don't have it in ours, but in this one from Jhayam Shepa, he also talks about how the Prasangika look at the three natures. Yeah. But so you can adopt that presentation in Majjhimika. But of course, this then, there'd be a disagreement on that. Yeah. And also, what we find is that there's also a disagreement on this, is that, yes, in fact, all schools, Majjhimika, Chittamatra, Sattvantika, Vaibhashika, all accept that things are produced through causes and conditions. I mean, that's all this is really saying. But built in to this, in the, not only Chittamatra, but also the lower one, Sattvantika, Vaibhashika, built into this assertion is truly existent. They're truly existent.
Even within the other part, yeah. It's just the mind.
No. So here, for Vaibhashika, Sattvantika, and Chittamatra, other power phenomena necessarily truly exist. Whereas, of course, Majjhimika would reject that. So even though the Majjhimikas would agree in terms of, yes, everything is produced of course and conditions, they're not truly existent. So there's a disagreement there. Mm-hmm. And then also there's, particularly here, the non-existent imputed factor, there's a disagreement. Yeah. If we're using this presentation from Majjhimika, the one we're interested in here is the non-existent is imputing that flower inherently exists. For Majjhimika, that doesn't exist. For Chittamatra, it exists. For all other schools, it has to exist. Otherwise, it can't exist. So what this is, the criteria for this, of course, will be different in the Prasangika. But yes, you're right. We can use this presentation for Prasangika, but it'll look a bit different. And as I said, in Jhanyam Chepa's text, maybe as a parallel to the Chittamatra, he does actually talk about these three natures in Prasangika, whereas normally we don't use that presentation in Prasangika.
It's just nice to look at the
Sure, sure. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You had another question?
Well, it's just
Yeah, so what they're saying, and we saw that, is that the someone who becomes an arhat and Shakyamuni Buddha both eliminated the afflictive obscuration, this grasping onto self of person.
Yeah.
Same abandonment. But because the Buddha was someone special, he created more merit, as we saw, this three countless eons of merit. Because of that, he had some extra qualities of all-knowingness and able to teach and so forth. But both an arhat and Shakyamuni Buddha, when their body finishes, both nirvana without remainder, there's nothing left of the contaminated aggregates. So therefore, for them, there's no distinction of if you become an arhat, oh, what do I do now to become a Buddha? And so they're only talking about the one single obscuration. And so for them, I think in general, so the Bodhisattva vehicle was something that someone, we talked about those three vehicles, didn't we? But the Bodhisattva vehicle, as far as I'm aware, in these two philosophical systems, the only person who went on the Bodhisattva vehicle was Prince Siddhartha, Shakyamuni Buddha. And the next Buddha that's going to come, they also talk about that, is the next person who's going to go on that Bodhisattva vehicle. Whereas, of course, these philosophical systems we're looking at would not agree with that, as we're going to see. Any other questions about this? Okay. One other brief point, and then we'll go for morning tea break, is also in the third turning of the wheel, we have the teaching on Buddha nature, the Tathagatagarbha Sutra. And that's very much talking about sort of the subjective experience. And so this is really very much a bridge into Tantra or Vajrayana practice, into that level of practice. So here, in the third turning of the wheel, we're only really concerning ourselves with this aspect of the third turning of the world, the three natures. And if we look at the four Buddhist tenet systems chart, we see also that in the Chittamatra, there are two sub-schools, the followers of scripture and the followers of reasoning, like Sautrantika. And we have the first one is the followers of Asanga. So Asanga was the brother or half-brother of Vasubandhu. So again, he was around the 4th century. So it was really on the basis of Asanga's, here it says the five treatises on the grounds, that we have this Chittamatra or mind-only philosophical system evolving. And then again later in the 7th century Dharmakirti, also then based on these ideas that there's no external phenomena, we have a sub-school of Chittamatra called the followers of reasoning evolving. And there are also some differences between these two systems. One, very briefly, and we sort of touched on this very briefly, I think, last week, was this idea of mind basis of all, the eight consciousnesses. So this was in terms of the self-cognizer. And so this is something, and the illustration of a person and what holds the karmic imprints. So this is a concept that a Sangha, within Sangha's teachings, was developed. So the first sub-school, as one of the differences, is they talk about these eight consciousnesses, this mind basis of all, whereas Dharmakirti is presenting the normal six consciousnesses. So that's one of the differences between the two sub-schools. But as we see in the proponent, it says that a Chittamatran is a person propounding Mahayana tenets, so the idea that there's a further goal of enlightenment, we need to eliminate the cognitive obscurations to achieve that, who does not assert external objects, but does accept truly existent self-cognition. So they both accept this idea of this self-cognition, which we'll look at again and again as we did last weekend. So these are the two sub-schools of Chittamatra that really started to develop around the 4th and 7th century. So that is the third philosophical system. So the Chittamatra and the Majjhimaka are the two philosophical systems we're going to be looking at this weekend. Any question about that? And then we'll go for a tea break.
Who does accept truly existent self-cognition. opposed to the difference in the Vaibhashikas and the Satvashikas, we just accept self-cognition. Is there a difference there?
Well, remember again, the Vaibhashikas don't accept self-cognition. So Satrantikas, self-cognition is truly existent. But of course they accept external objects. Yeah? So Vaibhashikas say there's external objects and no self-cognition. Satrantikas saying there is external objects and self-cognition. Chittamatrans say there's no external objects and self-cognition. Yeah. In fact, these three schools, Vaibhashika, Satrantika, Chittamatra, are sometimes called the proponents of objects, which means truly existent objects. So for Chittamatra, they also accept that things truly exist, but they're not external to the mind. So even though they're internal to the mind, as we're going to see, they're still truly existent. In the Chittamatra, of course, the mind itself is truly existent, but also the phenomena we experience, even though they're internal to the mind, they're also truly existent. So for them, other powered phenomena, whether it's the mind or whether it's all the things we experience, truly exists. Not as external objects, of course, but they still truly exist. So this flower for Chittamatra is truly existent. It's truly existent flower that is of the nature of the mind. What the implications of that we'll be looking at, of course. So we'll have to go into that. So this is just a starting point, because there's a lot to be discussed about that. Okay, morning tea time. So half an hour break, come back at 10:45.